Hey, my first one in a while. I had to take a little downtime for the holidays and personal stuff. So good to be back. And I'm fired up to have Marty Lenz from KOA Denver, dad of three, husband of one. How's it going?
Good. How are you, my friend?
Man, you know, it's been a little rough. We'll get into that a little bit later. But are you a dog guy?
I am a dog guy.
So you have one.
We have one. We have a Labradoodle whose name is Harvard because of the crimson coat. Quick story, though. We got the dog in the Bay Area, but we didn't find out until a month later that the breeders of the dog were Stanford alums, and they named the dog Stanford. We never knew that. Or we'd have kept the name Stanford instead of Harvard. Yeah. So,
what is it about, I was going to talk a bunch of news and stuff, but I lost two dogs in the span of 6 weeks. And so my life is unraveling. What makes your dog so amazing?
Because it's unconditional love. And loves you when you don't even deserve it. And I say this, I think I'm a decent soul, but I don't deserve the love that dog gives me. I'm pretty dismissive of it. I'm not the hugest animal guy. I don't dislike him, but I'm not. My kids and my wife, my wife's definitely the alpha in more ways than one. But she's the one that, you know, that dog does everything, but that dog always nudges me, comes up and loves me, always happy to see me regardless of my mood. I know you know that as well with your dogs. So it's just a sweet animal. And so there's just, and some days it's just neat to know that that dog is looking at you and thinking, you're my best friend. And it's like, yeah, you are a sweet dog. As they always say, the saying is, you know, let us be as good as our animals as our dogs think we are. So
I have not mourned as much for a human being as Bentley, you know, Pitbull Rottweiler, almost 13 years old. So, you know, human beings, they have to take this vow. They say, till death do us part. And some people can honor that, some that can't, you know, which is something else. But the dog, they don't need to hear those words or say those words. They just do it.
Well, again, it's not that people can't love necessarily unconditionally or give all of themselves, but dogs do it and they don't expect anything in return. I mean, it's like the altruism of the animal. It's like there's nothing that they expect. I mean, you see this all the time. You see people that are horrible to animals, but that animal will continue to crawl back to them because that's all they want. They just want the love and the attention. And I have to remind myself, I said, well, dog comes up to me. He just wants to say hi. And, you know, he wants to be acknowledged. So I just always try to rub his nose or acknowledge his, I know you're here. I remind you, but that's why you mourn, because those dogs love you. Whether you're having a good day, bad day, whether you're a good person that day, a bad person that day, it doesn't matter. In the dog's eyes, you're perfect every day. So.
I'm going to have to maybe start with the guests and only include people that love dogs. Tell me about the dog. Like, I remember Gary Radnich, when he was on for years on KNBR, he'd ask, what car are you driving? Hey, what do you drive? So
right.
Be part of his bit, but you know, my thing will be about the dog. That's means everything to me. You are doing the morning show, KOA Denver, and you've got a newer co-host I saw for the last month. That's right.
Gina. That is correct. Yeah.
Hey, so we talk sports a lot. And you're developing chemistry as a team. Is that a part of what you've got to do with her as well, right?
A little bit. I mean, Gina's really unique. And I almost say this every day and I feel bad. She's younger. I mean, she's my daughter's age. I mean, I have a daughter that's 29, another one that's 20. Gina's 27 years old. And not that that matters, but it's a different dynamic because my former partner, the legendary April Zespal, you know, she's 52 years old. So we're contemporaries, at least in age and in living space, in that, you know, our sensibilities of kids of the 80s, and we have those things in common. The beauty of Gina is she's extremely well-read, knows a lot of things, but she brings a younger sensibility, a different dynamic, which I think is great and helps broaden my horizons about, you know, what she's thinking. And like I said, even though I have daughters that are her age or would be kind of contemporaries, you know, Gina has a real interesting view and outlook. And you need that with news. I mean, half of what I think ails our business is sometimes we have a hard time putting news in context about how it relates to people. And that doesn't mean, you know, facts and lies and mistruths, but I'm saying sometimes you have to relate news. How does it impact you? How do we cover it? How do we report it? How do we ask questions to helpfully advance the conversations? And so when you bring somebody in like Gina, she brings in that younger perspective, or that perspective of the 20-something set, you know, mid to late 20 set of how they consume news and information, which I think is fantastic. I mean, we joke all the time on KOA, you know, our demo's 50 to dead. I mean, it's an older, it's a, an older listening station, and I'm 55. So she does bring in that younger generation and sensibilities to how we cover and report things, which I think is absolutely fantastic and helps make me a better, more thoughtful, if you want to say, broadcaster and commentator on the news, knowing that I have a partner that has a little different view because of her experience, you know, and her personal experiences and her time, and how she views the world and how she views news and information.
How do you deal with the whole opinion issue? You know, we're much more in today's generation with social media able to voice our opinion. When I first came up, hey, don't talk religion, don't talk politics, because you're going to piss off a segment of your audience no matter what. So how do you deal with that dynamic as a news person?
Well, I mean, there's always a certain amount of opinion. I mean, we're allowed to have opinions if they're grounded in the facts and honest information, you know, or is the information the facts that we know them at the moment. That's why I tell people all the time. I said, we have a right to change our minds and views based upon further information, reporting, and facts. Like, you may hold a view I'm going back here, you know, people hundreds of years ago used to think that the earth revolved around the sun. Well, you know, that changed because we became more informed in science. Luckily, unlike Copernicus, they didn't put us in jail if we, you know, didn't believe or subscribe to that. But I think it's okay. What makes it harder though, Dave, for what we do, if you want to call us straight news people, in my realm, is if you're on an operation, on a station that carries people that aren't, if you want to say, I don't mean to make it sound like they're necessarily lying, it's not that, but aren't beholden to certain facts and information, because they can carry the opinion and have opinions, and they don't always have to be tethered to, in a sense, the facts. It can be tethered to what they feel or an opinion on a subject, even if the data counters that, you know, whether it's health related policy or politic related. So they're afforded that authority, you know, that availability. We're not necessarily. Now, we're able to have an opinion, for example, you know, the vaccines with COVID, I'm sorry, they work, but that opinion's grounded in science and based on a billion injections of people. That doesn't mean there's not, you know, maybe certain side effects and health issues, but that's, if you want to say, you're arguing the minority, you're arguing the lesser of the data, not looking at the data in the totality. So that's an example of it. You can have an opinion and not want to get vaccinated, that's fine. But if you're not doing it, you're not doing it because the science says not to do it. You're doing it because that's your personal opinion. That we don't necessarily have. We go with, well, you know, the data shows this, so this is where we are at this point, and that's how we proceed and move forward. That's one example. But before we, you know, to follow up on that, you know, my station, like a lot of stations for 30 plus years, carried Rush Limbaugh. However you feel about him, and I'm not saying that maybe there wasn't information that was factual. That was not his modus operandi. His modus was, and he'd be honest about it, is to gather as much listeners as possible to charge high, you know, sales ad rates so he could make money for him and his operation. So, you know, whether that was doing it by using truth, using hyperbole that he used, using some of his sarcasm, some of his wit, I think he was a tremendous broadcaster. That's how he did it. So he didn't have to be tethered to the facts. But the problem with that too is he was allowed to, because he serves a different master, to play footsie and play a little fast and loose with certain things to curry favor with people that would listen to him longer and keep with the station longer. So, you know, folks that do that, I'm not judging them, but they sometimes make my job a little harder because I'm not afforded that. Not that I'd really want to be anyways, but I'm not afforded to play fast and loose with information. I'm really there to call balls and strikes and put it down the middle. And if I offend people on the left, on the right, because the facts are what the facts are, then they have to sort that out. That's not my problem. That's theirs.
Hey, you cover everything from Washington politics, and I saw the rebranding of the Fat Tire Classic beer.
Yes.
You got the full gamut. You know, how do you handle things like George Santos and that slime ball?
Well, we don't get into that as much because we really try to be more local. If you want to say, the mix of our news is definitely probably 75-25 local to national. You know, we may have guests and interview them or talk to them about a George Santos possibly. I mean, that's a real, that's not even politics. There's a real personality, if you want to say glitch or issue there with him. Yeah, we'll talk to our local politicians, and you know, some of them on the left and the right can't, you know, maybe aren't always calling it quite accurate because again, they're trying to curry favor with the base, raise money, votes, strengthen their hand. So, you know, luckily now we do have some politicians that, you know, I think some people look at and maybe scratch and shake their head. But George Santos is a unique new person. We have him in our news coverage, but we don't really talk about him that much. We may have a national guest on and maybe touch on it briefly, but we don't go into much of a deep dive because he's not our representative. If he was, then we would. And you know, I think, you know, Lauren Boebert's from Colorado. She's in District 3. That's the western slope of the state. She's been on with us once before. We don't have her on a regular basis. You know, my colleagues have her on. We just don't. I mean, if there's something newsworthy to have her on, we will. But, you know, I say this with respect. I'm looking for folks that are about governance and not necessarily grievance. And, you know, in some instances, I'm not sure she's always about that. You know, but she has a fervent base that believer. And she, I have to say, in many ways, she's more even a national brand than a local brand of doing the work. Yeah, I mean, she's interesting to say the least. She only ran a re-election by 500 votes, but you know, her district is an interesting district. It's a western part of the slope that's more rural, but it also includes Aspen. I don't have to tell you about the affluency of Aspen. So she's in an interesting district, and she's an interesting character. Let's just say that. So
we were talking before, we've got this little running bit going, hey, I don't want to do a disservice or do a disservice. Hey, so I want to get in. I want our audience to know, what are some things that you said on the air, and we'll get into that one in particular, that you wish you could take back and say, oh, I can't believe I did that as a broadcaster?
You know, without going in too much of the details, if you remember the Tejano singer, very talented one, Selena, passed away, sadly, was murdered by her thing. And I was doing music radio, and I was probably running a little fast and loose with, you know, with some. So when I played the song, after the song, I said, you know, the late Selena, caller calls and saying, I didn't realize that she was dead. And I think I said something to the effect, I said, yeah, it was some off the hand remark, and I can't even remember it, but it wasn't the wisest choice of words. And so I got some calls about that. And I was like, I didn't mean it that way. I guess I was so stunned that the person didn't know, because it was probably, you know, maybe a month after she passed. So I, you know, and it seemed, at least in that music realm, it was pretty big news. This person didn't know. So I was probably a little fast and loose about that. So I got called. So I had to apologize. And I say, you know, like I said, I guess I was more stunned that the people didn't know about this already. So that, you know, like that, that was just being, not realizing this again, this may help you. Not everybody consumes news and information sometimes the way we do on a regular basis, and we have to be mindful of that. So
yeah, the one we were talking about, kind of off air, a little running gag, is that high school football game where it was Concord High School, and
they were playing Clayton Valley too.
Yes, they were playing Clayton Valley. And they had a system and a coach where they never would kick, right? They didn't kick extra points. They didn't. They had to kick off, right? But they didn't kick field goals. And there was something that you said about a disservice because they weren't learning the whole game, right?
Yeah. Football. I think what I was saying, the game is called football. And yeah, it's not kicking every play, but he didn't kick. But I guess the thing I was thinking as a coach and a teacher, and I remember it well, is like you're there to teach kids about the totality of the game. And it doesn't mean you don't have your offensive philosophies or you can't have nuance and do different, but he never kicked. And I'm thinking, teach the kid to kick. And I don't know if it's because we found out he doesn't actually do that. I don't even remember, but I remember saying on the air, I said, well, he's doing his kids a disservice. And I remember our executive producer for Comcast, you know, the feedback got to the coach didn't like it. And I'm like, you know, and I said, I wasn't trying to say the coach was an idiot or bad, because that was not right. He wasn't a bad coach at all. I know he had a, but I just remember thinking, you know, if you're not teaching the kids to kick, this is before that coach that never punted, right? Always went for it on fourth down. And I'm like, I don't know. It's like, are you trying to be too cute by half? I think if you, you know this and know the game, and if you are into the analytics, there are times you maybe do or don't do this, but if you think you're outsmarting people by trying to reinvent the wheel, I guess it was kind of like, it just didn't make a lot of sense to me.
And I don't think you're wrong for saying it. It's just that in our environment there, we were advocates for high school sports and ripping on the coach.
Yes. They're guys, they're not getting paid millions of dollars to do it. And that's, so to your point, and this shows you, comments can be right, but without the context, if this is a pro coach or a college coach that's getting tens of thousands, hundred thousand, millions of dollars, the criticism level is different than a high school coach who just says, man, I go for two. This is what I do. And that's where, you know, again, the two things can be true. If I felt I was right, yes. But at the same time, criticism at that level for that coach and those kids probably not warranted like it would be somewhere else.
Yeah. And just like real life, sometimes we got to hold our tongue with stuff we want to say and our personal relationships, you know, too.
Yes.
I don't think I ever told this one on the air about Wilt Chamberlain when he passed away. And I was on the air with Fred Wayne. And, you know, he was famous for what he did off the court as well as on the court. He had the 100 points in the game, but the 20,000 women.
Oh, yeah.
That was in his book. So the anchor was actually doing the math about like what that would mean starting at the age of 18, you know, 18 to 50, it'd be this many. And the numbers were insane. But the fact that we actually computed on the air, we were calculating on the day he passed away, you know, that bothered a few folks and led to the anchor being suspended and me getting, you know, yelled at by our program director.
Oh, you know what's funny? You do that maybe not today. I don't know. In different environments, on a podcast, you probably wouldn't get in trouble. On a broadcast, it's different. I wonder if that message is received differently. Gets into that whole discussion now. I saw somewhere, one of my all-time favorite movies is Blazing Saddles, and it's unbelievably politically incorrect. Could Mel Brooks, could they make that movie today? And there's a part of me would like to say, I wish the heck they could, but there's a part of me saying probably not, because our sensibilities of what's funny and what's not and what's appropriate and what's not have seemed to change. And so it's probably, you know, I wonder if it were said in a different form, like here, then you can get away with it. But when you're probably doing the broadcast, not so much so. But there's shifting sands with what's appropriate. And I'm not saying that's necessarily bad, but there is a chilling effect when it comes to language or comes to expression to some degree that I think is a bit of a problem. You know, people, comedians, Bill Maher, other people who I like talk about that on a regular basis. For example, he talks about that he doesn't do college campuses anymore. And a lot of these comedians don't do anymore because it's like, it's not worth the blowback of people. If I say something, it's a joke, but people take it and internalize it and personalize it. And so I don't know if we've lost our funny bone, or I just don't know if we maybe have to be more conscious about, again, who's receiving that message. But at the same time, I'm saying, look, the message may be this, but there's not personal intent with it. It's the ability to laugh at each other. I mean, and it's easy for me to say, I'm a middle-aged white male, so I say that. But I mean, one of the best gifts I have is being able to learn to laugh at myself. And I love being able to laugh at myself. I love when people can make fun of me. My mantra is, I take my job seriously. I don't take myself seriously. But again, that's easy for me to say because I'm a middle-aged white male. I haven't been a part of a class that's been discriminated. And so, you know, maybe if I had, I'd maybe feel different about that.
Yeah. You don't want to be canceled though. That's for sure.
Well, no, but I also think that the problem with some of the canceling is all you do is you drive more people to listen. This gets in that whole thing with social media and banning people. Yeah. You know, if I don't like something, I came from the old background, just shut it off, ignore it, walk away. No one's forcing you to have to tune in or consume it. But when there's full bans on people, I think if anything, it's the opposite effect. You do that, then you create more curiosity, more controversy, and more people wanting to consume it. So I think there's a bit of a balance in doing that. And I'm not saying people should be able to say everything they want all the time, because that's something else too. There's definite freedom of speech, but that doesn't mean it comes with freedom from accountability of it. You got, you know, the consequences. And, you know, the old saying is you have a right to protest my protest. So you can do that. But I think shutting somebody totally out and off does the opposite of trying to, you know, cancel it. I think you drive more people to it. I simply, if you don't like what somebody's saying, again, simply turn the channel, walk away, ignore it, consume something else, or combat it with your own speech. That's what I think is probably a better thing to do.
Hey, a couple of sports things in your Denver area. Nuggets cooking. They won 8 in a row.
Huh.
Last night, I went over Minnesota. Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic. They're like the new Stockton and Malone.
Yeah.
What's the vibe like with the Nuggets? And could this be the year they come out of the West?
The vibe is great here with the Nuggets. I mean, we were talking about this today with my sports guy, Mike Rice, because Joker just passed the all-time assist lead with the Nuggets and took it from Alex English. I knew Alex English was a great passer back in the day, but we knew Alex English as a tremendous scorer, which he was. And I didn't realize he was the all-time assist leader for the Nuggets, but he did it in such a simple, smooth kind of way, non-subtle ways. It's amazing to know that those Nuggets teams are some of the best. The problem is they existed with the Showtime Lakers. So they were never going to get by, Magic and Kareem and Worthy and AC Green and all those guys, Kurt Rambis. That was just, they weren't going to get out of the West, even though those Nuggets teams had the Issels, at times the Vandeways, the Calvin Nats, the Alex Englishes, the Fat Levers, who I know is doing what coverage for the Kings in Sacramento. Anyways, yes, this is a great Nuggets team. And then here's the other reason. The NBA is wide open this year. I don't think you look at the league and say there are some really, really good teams, but I don't think you can say, oh, there's an elite team. This is not like even 5, 6, 7 years ago where you look at the Warriors and say, it's the Warriors and wet blanket over the other 31, or 29. This is a year where the league is wide open. The West is wide open. And the Joker could win his third MVP in a row, which would be saying something. And yes, we're playing cuts from him today in the sports cast that we have. And, Joker's, when he found out, he says, I just want to be known for a guy that shared the ball, that passes the ball, that helped facilitate my teammates. And it's like, that's why he's a superstar, is because he's not a selfish human being. He's the best man on the court, but he's not selfish. He dishes, he finds. It's unreal. But these Nuggets, I think, will get to the Western Conference Final. I could see them in Memphis playing in the finals, and that would be a heck of a final. But yeah, this is the first time in my time here in Colorado growing up that I have actually felt Nuggets can make the NBA final. I hadn't felt it the past couple of years because of the Warriors and some other teams and the LeBron's Lakers. But this is the first time I feel like, no, I think the Nuggets can definitely make the finals.
The new Broncos coach will be?
People are praying for Sean Payton.
Heck yeah.
I don't know. I'm gonna say Dan Quinn. I could see he interviews tomorrow. Actually, we're interviewing Dan Quinn and the DC from the 49ers. And I joked on the air and said, and they're both preparing for each other for Sunday. But I could probably see Dan Quinn, because my guess is this. I think Sean Payton's interested, but he wants $20 million. And we probably have to give up a first round pick to the Saints. I don't care about the first round pick. I know people get bent over about that. It's like, no, this is a league, free agents. We can get people. I'm not sure Sean Payton wants the Bronco job. Not that he doesn't want it, but I think he wanted the Chargers job, but Staley staying around, fired his coordinators, but he's staying around. And I still think, even though I don't think they'd fire McCarthy, I think he wants the Dallas job. So I'm not sure he'd take the job. He'd be a great coach, won a Super Bowl, but it's been many years. So, but I could see Dan Quinn. But the problem is, last time we went with the defensive guy was Vic Fangio. Didn't work out well. Nathaniel Hackett, nice man, but way in over his head. There's no one out there that's very sexy to me, but I just got a feeling I don't think it'll be Sean Payton. There was interest in Harbaugh, but I knew I felt instinctually he can't leave Michigan until he wins a national championship. Once he does that, then I could see him coming back to the NFL, because I think he has unfinished business there. Obviously, we were covering him when he was at the 49ers, but I think it'll be Dan Quinn.
CSU, a couple of 4-game losing streaks this year, 3-9, fifth in the Mountain West. You watch the season with a heavy heart.
Yeah, I do. And our best win is beating St. Mary's. So, or are you talking?
No, I'm talking about the football team.
Oh, the football team. Yeah, yeah. Well, we can get into the basketball. Well, here's the thing: what happened with this team? Coach Norvell is the right guy, and he's doing all the right things. And we had the number one recruiting class this year, and he brought in a whole bunch of transfers from Nevada last year, which I felt bad for Nevada. What it turned out to be, Dave, is I really thought that I knew it wouldn't be a reload. It wasn't going to be that, but I really thought this team could be a 500 team. Turns out we probably should have been, but it really was a rebuild, a culture shift, style of football. You know, we ended the year, we only had 53 guys on scholarship at the end of the year when most teams have 80. So we were playing with an arm tied on our back with the redshirt freshman QB. You see flashes of brilliance, but you also saw where we let games get away. Our defense was great. You know, if we matched the offense with a D, then we are probably talking a 6-7 win team. We were in every game, but what, two? Boise we weren't in, and another one that escapes me is like, yeah, we weren't going to be in that. Maybe Washington State, but the rest of the games we were in at some point, but we let slip away. I think they flipped the script. I could see this team being an 8 or 9 win team next year if things fall right. The schedule's favorable. You know, we have Washington State, but they're losing guys. We have CU. That's going to be an interesting matchup with Coach Prime. But, you know, even though he's getting some good guys in, you know, chemistry and biology are two different things. So, but yeah, that I do watch it with a heavy heart, but then the reality hit me, Dave. I just realized, yeah, this team's just not very good. It's not that they're not trying. They didn't quit because the team last year quit, or 2 years ago, Adazio was a disaster. But this team didn't quit. They kept battling. They're young. So I'm very bullish and very optimistic moving forward with this program.
You know what? You have a kind of this well-rounded balance, you know, sports, you know, news, you know, entertainment. How do you manage balance in your life, being a good family guy? You know, the top of your description, father of three, husband of one, you know, being able to be a good family person and yet know so much and be tapped into so many things.
Well, I mean, I don't think anybody necessarily defines you as a person based on your knowledge. I think they define you as how you are as a human, how you treat people, how you interact with people.
So just as far as spending your time, though,
it's easy. My oldest daughter's on her, you know, out with, you know, four of her own boys. So I'm a granddad already, so I don't have to worry about her. She's doing great. My middle child's in college at Purdue. So I have the boy at home, my 6'2", 250 pound, 15-year-old son. So, you know, it's a balance. You come in and out, and you know, they're doing their own things. And my wife is she's extremely busy. She's an extremely successful person in her realm of expertise. So it's just carving out some time here or there, but you know, we make it work. Here's the beauty of being able to do that. I work some hard hours, but I have the rest of my day free. I mean, I'm home most mornings by 10 a.m., if not maybe even sooner. Now I get to work at 3:30 in the morning. But I'm home. If I don't have some post-show interviews or, you know, sales things, if I'm endorsing a client and I go make a sales call with one of our reps or do a meet and greet, the PR things that we do at the station, most days I'm home. I have my whole day free. I go to bed by 8 o'clock, but I have my, you know, for the most part, I have my day free to do whatever, spend time. My wife works out of the house. So, I mean, I see her a lot. You know, COVID forced that, but she works globally and internationally, so she's not always traveling, so she has a home office here where she does her work. So I see her every day, and you know, we carve out some time, have a late breakfast, lunch, hang out, do those things.
So for watching sports or a binge watching a show, you're not ever watching it that night. You're maybe, you know, watching a game during the day or from the night,
right? Well, so last night I you know, the Colorado State San Diego State basketball game was on Fox. I watched a little. It started at 8:30. But then I was like, God, I could stay up. And I wanted to stay up. And the game went into overtime. It was a great game. The Rams sadly lost. But I have to get to bed because I need to have some rest. I need to be able to have my focus in the morning to cover and do what we do. But yeah, that's the one thing I missed about living on the West Coast. You know, everything, you know, comes on an hour earlier. So it was easy to to be able to watch things when you're getting the primetime games at, you know, 4 or 5 in the afternoon or whatever, and they're done by the time, you know, we'd have to go to bed or get rest. Yeah. And that's the other thing too. Like a lot of times just to keep aware of things, like I'll watch the monologue of some of the talk shows, but yeah, I'm actually watching it in the morning on my drive into work, listening to it on my phone, what they're talking about, just to kind of keep a generality. And quite frankly, some of those guys, you know, Stephen Colbert, I think does a great job of interviewing people. He's a, you know, comedian or light actor, but he does a better job of doing some insightful interviews on heavy topics with prominent people and decision makers better than some, if you want to say, the expert journalists do. So I do always keep abreast and on top of those things.
Hey, what about the decision? This is for, I guess, maybe somebody just in life taking a bold leap. You know, you were out in the Bay Area working at what was a legendary station in KCBS. I guess the call letters, they still are, but you had a good gig out there. Nice life. Bay Area is a great place to live, but making that leap of faith, taking that leap and, you know, going to Denver in new situation, you know, being a morning guy. I know you're coming back home in a way, but still that's a courageous, you know, a move that not everybody would make.
Well, I mean, it's home. You know, KOA is the KCBS and the KGO of its market. It's the prominent station. It's a heritage station. It's a legendary station. Every bit as much as the old KGO and KCBS. And I guess the thing is, you know, I was 50 when I made that move, so I've been back 5 years. Those roles don't come up all the time. And, you know, my wife and I, we love the Bay Area. We lived in Lafayette. Love the Bay Area. It's our second home. We still have very close ties and friends, and we get out there a couple of times a year to see them and hang out because we miss it. But Colorado's home for both of us. My wife's a Colorado native. I'm not. I'm a transplant. I moved to Denver when I was 6, but my wife was born here. And when we had talked and said, hey, you know, we love San Francisco, but if there's an opportunity to go back to Denver, we ought to think about it. My mom's here. My mom's older. She's a widow. My dad passed away 25 years ago. So and she's older, and I want my kids to be around her and have those relationships. My adult daughter was living here at the time. She was pregnant with her first child, and you know, we wanted to be closer for that too. So it just made a lot of sense. And the only way we would have moved back to Denver was for this role. I wouldn't have gone for any other radio role. It had to be KOA. It had to be this role that I'm in now. Otherwise, you're right. I had a great situation at KCBS. I love the people I work there. Unbelievable pros, unbelievable opportunity, exposure. I mean, I take so much pride. You know, you reference my bio and my Twitter feed. You know, I put KCBS in there. I'm extremely proud that I worked there because I worked with some real legend hired by the legendary Ed Cavanero, which I hold up as a huge badge of honor saying that guy hired me. I mean, it's so you're right. But this is the only reason that we came back, because this is home. And this is an opportunity that, you know, may not have come around again in my lifetime. So if I don't take it now, then you miss out. And I wouldn't have had regrets if, you know, if my daughter now, who's in college, she had just started high school at Akalani's High School. If she were maybe in her junior, senior, I maybe wouldn't have taken it because I didn't want to blow up her whole high school career. But we moved her out. She finished up high school out here. My son was still in elementary, middle school. So it was, in a sense, less impactful. But it was the right time and the right move for us to do it. Now, having been back home, you know, the other reason too, the Bay Area is expensive to live. I got to tell you, Denver's become extremely expensive to live. Oh my God. I mean, home prices, home values, gas, insurance, all those things. Denver's become very expensive to live, and there's a variety of reasons why. A lot of people want to live here. We're getting a lot of people that are moving here from California, but actually the number one state of people moving here are from Texas. So, but a lot of Texas people relocating here, a lot of Californians, Florida, East Coast, they're coming here because Denver's become a big city. Denver's become a corporate hub. Denver has the lifestyle. Denver, you know, in the scheme of things, is probably still a little more affordable than some of those cities, but not by much. I mean, we're more affordable than New York or Boston or San Francisco, but it's not the significant difference it was 5, 10, 15 years ago. I mean, in that sense, Denver from an expense wise has has caught up, but it's the lifestyle. You can live here. It's a beautiful place to live. You know, we had snow by looking around, you know, we had 9 inches of snow and today it's sunny and 40 degrees. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that make Denver attractive, which, you know, is getting people moving here. And it just does, it makes the cost and everything go up.
No, I made it sound like you made this courageous move. That was a no-brainer. You had to do
it. No, well, it is. No,
you had to do it.
It's kind of you. It's
no, you had to do it, man. Come on, with all those things well, you mentioned with the family. You can't,
well, from a career standpoint, and again, I was very content.
Bye-bye, San Francisco. Bye.
But I mean, it was hard to leave. It wasn't, you know, sometimes you leave a job and you're like, thank God I'm out of here. And I was like, no, I was leaving with a very heavy heart because I loved all those people. I remember writing a note to everybody just saying, hey, I love you guys. I miss you guys. You guys, I always will carry with me. Since then, a number of those folks have retired, the John Evans, Larry Cherones, the Ed Cavaneros, who I mentioned, people that I love, that I have the utmost respect for, as I say, peers. They weren't my peers. They were up here. I'm some debt person down here. But I mean, you just admire and appreciate their kindness and their professionalism. But yeah, coming, it was just for this role, this opportunity. We had to take it. It was the right time and made the most sense to do.
Dude, you're good at this. We'll do this again.
Well, I love this. I love talking. I don't want to talk about me. We can talk more about you and what's going on.
Well, have me on sometime.
Have me on your own podcast.